Attention, scum! You are in defiance of the Emperor's law. You cannot hide. You cannot escape. We are judgment. Prepare for sentencing.
This video today is sponsored by Fat Shark and Darktide. The time is upon all to revisit Darktide. Rebuild your squad, return to the orders of the Inquisition, and descend into the hell of a corrupted hive sprawl. As I highlighted recently this month, major updates are happening within the active pantheon of 40k games. And if you have not engaged in a session of Darktide of late, I do encourage you to have a renewed crack at it, because since its release there have been some solid and significant updates. Their new RBT's DLC is released from June 23rd, and you can wishlist that now. Check out the link directly below in the notes of this video. Darktide released unbelievably at the back end of 2022. You'll remember the extended lore prequel that I covered establishing the situation that takes place in the game, or if you missed that, link on screen now. We entered into the darkness of Hive Tertium, an Imperial world on the brink of collapse. Our team operate under the ongoing orders of an Inquisitorial vessel stationed in orbit of Atoma Prime. They arrived in the darkest hour to command its potential redemption. Our assigned goal is to seek the corrupted, purge the heretics, and recover any and all relevant information to assist the Inquisition. For those who can learn how to survive, they can unlock and strengthen their personal team of agents as they gain trust with the armourers and inquisitorial aides, who will then deploy them upon ever more critical and challenging missions against some of the most abhorrent enemies to the Imperium of Mankind. Alongside the RBT's release will be a free update, a curated mission path that guides new players through Tertium, introducing characters, locations and threats. Missions will feature increased story context, with debriefs showcasing the impact of the strike teams, and seasoned players can be offered the option to re-experience the improved collective story of Darktide from the beginning. There will be a reworked difficulty progression system, where players unlock higher difficulties by demonstrating skills, not just by leveling up, and progression will be tied to completing a number of missions at your existing difficulty, rewarding mastery over time played. Additionally, all missions currently in rotation will be available at every difficulty, and this update will significantly broaden the mission selection for players at any tier, offering greater variety and more meaningful choices. The game was and still is a lot of fun, mostly due to its richly immersive environment and its engaging mechanics, something which, for any veterans of this channel, will remember has always been a high priority for me with any game, because visuals can be inspiring, but solid intuitive mechanics are what keep you coming back again and again. Despite a shaky start, Darktide saw awesome core gameplay, which kept me locked in for hours at a time, because while there were technical issues to iron out and game elements to be delivered, far from abandoning the game as you so often see these days, Fat Shark remained committed to Darktide with multiple updates, new missions, narrative expansion and class overhauls, like the skill trees, the weapon upgrade systems. And more recently, at the end of 2024, we saw the Grim Protocols update, which unleashed Havoc Mode. This is a ranked high-intensity challenge loop for veteran players. Think of it as Darktide's answer to something akin to a roguelike sense of escalation paired with its own horde-style gauntlet. And that really requires teams to plan before they deploy, to discuss strategy and composition, really dial in their focus, because failed runs could lead to demotion. Essentially, it's skill-based content for veteran players to sink their teeth into. But for myself personally, Darktide works best as a game that you dive into from time to time. A weekend grind of slaughtering heretics while chatting to friends, discussing your latest 40k lore explorations mixed in with some knife-edge clutch moments. And whereas ranked gameplay requires some level of genuine endgame reward system to make it all worthwhile, plus a very stable, balanced technical environment, both of which can be very difficult to deliver, not to mention things that are relatively subjective from the player's point of view, the overall grind and mechanical enjoyment is something which never goes away. Now though, we have for the first time since release a new class arriving, the Adeptus Arbites. We have all seen, of course, many recommends for new classes in the game, and I think it was always wildly over-optimistic for anybody who thought a Space Marine would appear, because the focus of its narrative is not there. It's on the human rejects, the disposable chaff that can be thrown against the corrupted depths of a hive world and a system barely clinging on. And by that measure, bringing in the Arbites is both a massive step forward in gameplay and narrative, because it will be an interesting balance against existing classes, hopefully without being completely game-breaking. Now, before we get into more of the lore RBT side of things, I wanted to speak a little about how the class landed for me. As a more casual player and not so into the heavy endgame grind, I'm not going to be so obsessively concerned about optimization of stats and that kind of thing. Nonetheless, going through the stat tree was quite interesting in terms of what you can get. So I've just reset from where I was at to have a little look at things. Now, up here at the top, there are a lot of those kind of just general stats. They do bleed into some of these more specific talents, like this one here with the remote detonation. So there's obviously for your dog, this one is like a shock mine, and then you've also got the RBT's grenade. So obviously, as you go down through the tree, like with the other classes, they specifically determine certain attributes that you're going to want to lean in toward. So for example, here we've got part of the squad, your Cyber Mastiff. It gives you coherency, reduces damage reduction, there's a lot of toughness buffs, stuff like that. This one, Ruthless Efficiency, again, coherency, reload speed, and then Breaking Descent, which gives you a 10% damage versus staggered enemies. Then you get down into these keystone abilities like Unleash Brutality, which gives your Cyber Mastiff prioritization over elite special enemies, deals them extra 25%. Lone Wolf, it's another Cyber Mastiff one, but just general buffs. And then another Cyber Mastiff one here at the end, Go Get 'em. It prioritizes ranged enemies, deals 50% damage to them. So again, you can really start to spec the dog how you want it to work. Then we've got your abilities here, Castigator Stance. Basically, that's your shield smashing one. So basically, when you're in that stance, it's just going to buff you basically for smashing enemies and related things here. Nuncio Aquila, it's kind of like a little servo skull, which you can put down. And again, it's just buffing coherency and enemies around you. Break the Line, Step Forward Bash causes high stagger to your enemies and related damage and so on and so on. So the role of the Arbitrator, the dog plays a really key component, but then beyond that, there's a lot of crowd control elements, which makes sense for what the class is. And here you go, here, look, there's loads of different stuff, just extra damage, toughness, stacking, bleed things, all these kind of things you can work down through. But then we got more keystones, execution, periodically mark elite specialists and bosses, and again, it's your Cyber Mastiff, 150% damage for 8 seconds after attacking a marked enemy, which is massive. And then, again, loads of sort of additional buffs around that. Keystone, Terminus Want, ranged attacks grant stacks of melee justice. So again, it's kind of a stacking, buffing, damage thing. That's the one, that's the pathway where you can leave the dog behind if you want to, and you can focus on being like an individual arbitrator without the dog. So it's very interesting, and I'm more sold on this class than I thought that I might be. I think it's genuinely well worth getting this new update, so do check out the wishlist link below. It helps me and it helps the channel, but beyond that, I just think it's genuinely worth checking this out, because it's very, very enjoyable to have the dog with you. There were several times where, as well, like enemies were running away from me and the dog would just leap down on them. The dog will pin stuff to the ground so you can just run in and smash it as well. There's just loads of functionality there. You can't specifically control the dog, like tell it go here, tell it go there, etc. It does its own thing, but by choosing your abilities through the stat tree, it will start to dictate the dog's behaviour. And more than anything else, it interrupts elites a lot of the time, which means it gives you more survivability, more ability to control what you are doing, which is kind of the entire point of the Arbites in the squad, is helping to control, push back against the hordes, and make those higher difficulty levels more manageable. The Imperium of Mankind spans over a million worlds. Its citizens are counted in unthinkable numbers, and across this vast empire, there are planets that are given wholly to agriculture, producing foodstuffs that sustain other worlds clad in metal and choked ash, industrial worlds of high-intensity fabrication, manufactorums and forge complexes, great machine cathedrals that pierce the sky and grind night and day. The workers which populate them rarely, if ever, see the light of their world. Most will not live to see old age. They will labour endlessly at the forges and assembly lines, shaping weapons, armour, munitions and war machines that fuel the armies of the Imperium, which are then in turn hurled into the endless unquantifiable wars all across the stars in the name of the God Emperor. Many of its wars are fought with strategies that amount to little more than a smothering weight of numbers, conflicts of attrition, where victory is counted in the sacrifice of the dead more than the achievements of the survivors. Entire campaigns are calculated by acceptable loss before even a single guardsman is ever deployed. For in a galaxy of planets that house populations in the tens of billions, a war which sees death in the millions are considered entirely acceptable losses. For all of the Imperium's resources, the most abundant is human life itself. For most of these souls, their fate is menial labour, to dig, hammer and toil, to operate aged machinery or tend the enduring crops of fields beneath acid-choked skies. Some will be press-ganged into the void-faring Imperial Navy, confined to rusting decks and suffocating engine rooms the size of cities. Others drafted into the ranks of local defence forces, even the Militarum if they're lucky. They may be trained for a few short weeks, maybe longer, handed a lasgun and deployed to war zones where survival is measured in minutes. Still others will be consumed by the bureaucracy, tasked with recording, compiling and correcting its vast quantities of data, very often by hand, within administrative systems which have not worked efficiently or even correctly for millennia. Still, the attempt is made to document every transaction, all incoming and outgoing pieces of data, for ultimately the Imperial tithe must be calculated, for this is the primary focus for those among the bureaucracy, the Adeptus Terror, the Arbites. Because for all of its incomprehensible scale and structure, there is still some purpose, but it operates far above the lives and visibility of those it claims to govern. For within the Imperium of Mankind, a single world, even a vital one, is but a mote of dust amid the endless dark. Warp storms rage, distorting time and severing systems from all contact. Conflicts erupt on the fringes of a system, and millions are sent to stem the tide. Planets may go decades, sometimes generations, without receiving a single message, let alone aid. The rare Imperial vessel that does arrive will come only to collect its tithes, grain, ore, data, or flesh. And when they leave, they take more than they give. This was the case for Hive City Tertium upon Atoma Prime. For when help came to their world, it came too late. The city now struggles against the corrupted forces who have finally reached its immense hive sprawl, and the ending remains unclear. Now, I think quite often it is a mistake to believe that the Arbites exist to help or protect the citizenry of a hive world. This is something I will remind about throughout this, because it is not the case. Their role is singularly to uphold the Lex Imperialis. That is the Emperor's law. They pursue this in its purest and most absolute form. And so, whether they should be assigned to a fortified precinct on a hive world or stationed alone at a forgotten outpost, each arbitrator is empowered to judge, punish, and maintain above all else order and, through force, if necessary. It goes without saying that an obvious comparison, and I know one many have requested me to revisit, is Dread, because at a superficial glance, the Adeptus Arbites might resemble the Judges of Megacity 1, and the comparison is certainly not entirely without merit. Both serve as judge, jury and executioner, both patrol decaying urban sprawls so vast they defy governance, both wield brutal weapons riding into lawless zones without backup and mete out sentences with cold objectivity. But beyond this, there is a deeper divergence, and it's one that defines the Imperium's character. Because in Dread's world, the law as represented is a last-ditch attempt to preserve order in the aftermath of something close to the complete collapse of human civilization. The judges patrol a dystopia so exaggerated that it's a clear satire of authoritarian excess and consequences, just as you see in the Imperium. However, judges still exist to theoretically protect a citizenry from choking on its own excess and entropy. The premise is not to necessarily glorify power, but to critique it. The absurdity of attempting to maintain order amid the chaos and paranoia of a city that is already operating with very little oversight. Dread, for all of his cold, inhuman, and ultimately capable attributes, is in some way a guardian of what was and what little now remains of civilized order. The Arbites, by contrast, do not exist for this purpose. They are not deployed to primarily protect the people. They are simply a direct extension of the bureaucracy, and that is an important distinction, that Imperial arbitrators are not at all enforcers of civil justice, but of compliance. They do not hope to save society, more to preserve the structure of civil obedience. And where Judge Dredd upholds a broken world because someone just must, the Arbites uphold the edicts of an unbreakable tyranny because no other future is permissible. In Megacity 1, the law is both oppressor and its very last hope. In the Imperium, the law for most is little more than their final sentence, handed down not in any hope of cultural redemption, but in cold service to its faceless authoritarian endurance. In a hive city like Tertium, where industry never stops and heresy breeds in the shadow, while the Emperor may adorn cathedral walls, its citizens told that he protects them, few will see this. For just as upon many worlds the Imperium itself becomes a myth, enforcement of his law becomes absolute fear. For those who carry and enforce it are seen most often not as his peacekeepers, but as his executioners. Their forces patrol the streets in heavy carapace armor, faces hidden behind mirrored visors, voices distorted through vox grills. They're not meant to be seen as men, or women, or individuals, more symbols of this ultimate authority. They're reminders of what is required by the Imperium itself, and that it does ultimately exist. Tertium itself is proof of how the Imperium can fail, a city of billions left to effectively fend for itself, now infested by cults, mutants, and worse. Yet even then, it still produces, it's still manufacturing, it's still obeying and trying to deliver the tithe, because where the administratum may falter, the guard may be overstretched, the Arbites remain. Not to negotiate, but to keep the blade of the tithe at the throat of planetary governors, to crush disorder and hold any lackluster local enforcers accountable. And that blunt role of duty to terror above all else is best represented by their iconic combat shotguns, because this is emblematic of the power they see fit to execute in their duties, an uncompromisingly brutal and adaptable weapon, in practical terms, capable of firing a wide range of ammunition, including the dreaded executioner rounds. These are said to contain a small machine spirit, which allows the shot to track the energy signature of its target, even through walls and cover. And when deployed against any who resist Imperial authority, it's a message that the guilty cannot run nor hide from the Imperium. and to really hammer home the point, when expending rounds is not necessary, should an Arbitrator run empty of their ammunition, the combat shotgun is so robust they can be used to simply bludgeon a target into submission, or death. In saying that, most Arbitrators will carry additional blunt force equipment that is usually preferable. Shock mauls crackle with energy, delivering electric discharges strong enough to even drop a charging Ogryn or stop dead a cultist in mid-ritual. And often RBT's patrols may wish to detain and interrogate more than crush those that they encounter. Such simplistic brutalities can be left to local enforcers. Should a situation escalate, their suppression shields can be employed in riot control. They also emit a pulsing energy field to protect the wielder and double as another bludgeoning tool capable of rendering most human disruptors unconscious. RBTs are also known to carry electro nets, pulse-charged bolas, and magnetic and neural clamps to be used when capturing a target that is designated as being more valuable than deserving of straight execution. Then lastly, and perhaps most infamously, while upon their most dangerous patrols, RBTs are assigned so-called cyber mastiffs. These are mechanical hounds with augmetic jaws and vox-linked instincts. And I covered these in a video some 4 years ago now, that's linked on screen, but we'll talk about them a little later in this video. And they are as much a tool of enforcement as any firearm. They can track targets through scent, heat and noise, and when unleashed will not stop until commanded or destroyed. Their specifically designed augmented bodies are capable of inflicting maximal damage against gang members, heretics, or just uncooperative guild members alike. In terms of the origins of the Adeptus RBTs, they are unsurprisingly quite ancient. One may have imagined that they emerged somewhere in the 10,000 years from the Heresy to the Era Indomitus. Maybe, as seen in many significant changes, they arrived out of the darkness of the Age of Apostasy. But in fact, no, for their legacy predates even the Imperium itself. The RBTs are not a creation of enlightenment, they are a refinement of human tyranny. Their origin lies in the blood-soaked aftermath of the Unification War upon Terra itself. Their earliest investigations were amid the palaces and ruinous ashen plains of old Earth, when the Emperor first cast down the petty tyrants, techno-barbarian warlords, which had carved terror into fiefdoms of madness. And out of that savage unification came the first stirrings of a return to centralized authority. For before the RBTs were ever named, their prototype existed in the form of proto-judiciaries, handpicked men and women drawn from the ranks of early administratum loyalists, noble and warrior households, gene-crafted Terran enforcers. The first Grand Provost Marshal to exist was also the first to highlight the blatant, unapologetic hypocrisy of the Emperor from the very inception of the Imperium. The RBTs were meant to represent the ruling authority humanity still held over itself. That the Imperium was not to be a straight dictatorship, not a totalitarian state, but merely stratified layers of governance, with humanity very much still in control, and yes, the Emperor at its head. However, their first choice for Provost Marshal was a little too effective in her role, and so when the Thunder Warrior's fate was carried out, it came amid the wreckage of that pre-unity era. Perhaps not expecting an ordinary human from this time to be quite so effective in the role, the Emperor and Valdor had sanctioned the creation of something new, this civilian apparatus of enforcement that would exist outside local rule, answering only to the throne and all the implications that go along with that. This new form of ultimate judiciary would for once hold integrity, not be compromised by petty warlords in their desperate need to cling to power amid the bloody conflicts of the unification. The illusion of their own authority was entirely necessary because humanity needed to believe after the unification that they themselves now were unified and importantly fairly judged in terms of order once more out of that blood-soaked time. but all too soon it became clear that the new Imperium may have cloaked itself in the language of justice, but was already compromised. Like the Custodes, the Arbites were to be simply another blade wielded cleanly or cruelly by the Emperor, and little more. Imperial law was a matter of politics and domination, not principle. Those who counted themselves among its ranks needed to display above all else a sense of unquestioning obedience, discipline, and moral detachment. They were not the arbiters of truth, more guardians of control. And in that crucible of imperial reconstruction, the first oaths of the Lex Imperialis were to be spoken, not amid the grand temples built to inspire and demand loyalty from its citizenry, but instead in the depths of its dungeons, amidst the screams of the defeated and the silence of the disappeared. That first Grand Provost Marshal would ultimately be exiled by Valdor. She had revealed the uncomfortable truth that could not be known by any. Her principles could not be swayed or diminished. The Emperor and his custodes had no answer for their actions. The abhorrence and hypocrisy was self-evident. Thus, the Arbites were born not out of a desire for justice, but out of fear. Fear that without them, the Imperium's fragile grip would crumble back into anarchy. And so, from their earliest origins, they carried the rot of hypocritical political ambiguity with them. Across the millennia, their armour may have changed, but their doctrines were codified into sacred tomes that ensured that the core of what they were remained. This rigid system of authority, designed to punish and pull tight the leash upon those within the civilian bureaucracy who forgot their place. To understand the Arbites is to understand a very dark and bleak truth. For across its history, they stand as a testament to the fact that the Imperium never truly escaped from the Age of Darkness, from the chaos and blood-soaked ground of the era of unification upon terror. The Imperium of Mankind merely gave structure to the horror and called it order. To an outsider, the Imperium is ruled by its now effectively mandatory religion, its doctrines enforced by unending war, all sustained by human sacrifice. But beneath it all, what binds its trillion-strong population into obedience is something colder and more enduring than faith – law. The Lex Imperialis is not merely a body of statutes, it's an ancient sprawling component of the Adeptus Terror's bureaucratic machine, built upon the all-too-human tendencies of privilege, paranoia, and punishment. In theory, the Imperialis is justice. In practice, it is enforced obedience. Certainly, none understand this contradiction more than the arbitrators themselves. Trained from youth to memorize edicts, they understand all too readily that they are not arbiters of right and wrong. We have seen the face of this within the annals of the Crime series, where judicial and investigative mandates overlap, but the methodology between different branches of those who represent the law are utterly distinct, where local enforcers operate with a kind of transactional realism, where bribery is expected, any and all evidence is negotiable. It's the grim, dark day-to-day of an imperial city. But arbitrators, wherever they should appear, bring one thing: finality. No appeals, no mercy, no compromise. When a judge invokes their cold absolutism, this remains the only relevant point. Because arbitrators do not scale their response to the crime. In the eyes of the law, all transgression is deviation from the Emperor's order, and deviation is damnation. Should a routine investigation into irregularities reveal a broader cancer of heresy stretching across entire precinct levels, while the crimes themselves may be banal, omissions in accounts, data trades, unregistered asset movements, the response is not. Entire hablocks will be sanctioned, families disappear, preachers burn. Darktide took this premise and festered it. For within Tertium, law exists not to preserve justice, but to hold back collapse. a task to which an arbitrator is as equally concerned with as would be any inquisitor and their agents. In the darkness, heresy seeps from every pipe. At the current point in the developments of the Hive City and the sectors within it that have been isolated, cults are not uncovered, they're expected. Every slum corner is a potential cell, every bludgeoned confession a tactical victory. There are no trials, no room for interpretation, for in such a dark hellscape, the law of the Imperium is not justice, not fairness, nor truth. It is the will of those who hold the power, and it is enforced without question. Those who would break it stand outside the light of the Emperor, alone, condemned, and judged. So as stated, when it comes to enforcement, the Arbites' concern is not for the individual nor the community even, but the machinery of the broader Imperium, in really whatever form that may take. Its infrastructure, its tithe, the uninterrupted operation of its departments and product. At its simplest, the Arbites are the guardians of Imperial continuity. They're there to keep the wheels, the machinery, turning. Whereas the military forces of the Imperium, the Astartes, Sororitas, Militarum, are most often concerned with those most severe existential threats to the Galactic Imperium and its worlds. Within this, they will of course also concern themselves with its citizens, but by contrast the reverse proportions are probably true of the Arbites. They're primarily concerned with the planets of the Imperium, its nobility, its governors, its citizenry. Of course, Xenos and heretics may become part of this, but most often they're interested in those base-level human activities. So when a manufactorum, say, is shut down by a worker revolt, a munitorum official is assassinated, when a subsector voxere is sabotaged by cult-interested infiltrators, it's the Arbites who may, well, respond. Not to restore peace for its own sake, but to ensure that production resumes and hierarchy and order are preserved. On worlds with sufficient garrison strength, such as Atoma Prime, the Arbites may even escalate to suppress full-scale rebellion or enforce ecclesiarchical orthodoxy through open conflict, however it is most effective in maintaining the stability and order of a world. But they don't intervene in petty crime, or even more significant crimes of murder, theft, smuggling, and so on, unless it risks bleeding upward into the productive workings of a planet. General civilian crimes remain the responsibility of planetary enforcers. Those local police forces can have a variety of names, usually they'll change with the customs of each world, and their integrity will fluctuate wildly. Because enforcers operate beneath the arbitrator's authority. They may assist in larger purges, or in some instances, they could be trained by Arbites. But in truth, the lines of jurisdiction are as fragile as the hive walls between districts. When inquisitors, cardinals, rogue traders come to invoke their privilege, the chain of command could still dissolve entirely when it comes to enforcers. But arbitrators are expected to adapt in order to remain operational, to act, to survive, and most importantly, to remain pure to their cause and purpose. So, in a place like Tercium, where everything is decaying and order is readily collapsing, they remain relevant by ensuring that the law remains the last thing that breaks. And if that means engaging in the same fight as those under the order of the agents, then so be it. Arbites, as an elite force of the Imperium, like many others, draw their ranks from the Schola Progenium, the orphaned offspring of Imperial servants raised in strict regimes of obedience, combat, and faith. They're the children of the executed generals, the vanished administratum adepts, the martyred ecclesiarchs, and from the Progenia will emerge the most exceptional Imperial servants. Some are chosen for their unshakable control over their peers, others for forensic precision and analytical resolve. All are marked by the Imperial trait of ruthlessness. To have no ties, no roots, so that once selected, an arbitrator is never stationed upon the world of their birth, because attachment itself is a liability, sentiment a weakness. And the Arbites cannot afford this. The arbitrators of Tertium are likewise undoubtedly surrounded by collapse in a city riddled with cult cells, data heresy, and the whispers of demons even. But they cannot afford any form of compromise. And while arbitrator is used as a very blanket term, there are numerous ranks and distinctions within the Arbites. In a hive maze like Tertium, titles though may carry additional weight in hab districts, because a name itself can instill fear before even a weapon is drawn, and I suppose in that sense this is very much like Dread. Squad level enforcement and precinct patrols mean deploying into the lower stacks, the sump corridors, the collapsing sub-levels of a hive city. These are tasks rarely welcomed, but ultimately necessary. Arbitrators will lead focused inquiries, running direct capture teams or kill teams, and are granted great latitude in their ability to interrogate and seize any and all materials relative to their investigations. For in a hive city as compromised as, say, Tertium, members of the Arbites are forced to dismiss surgical lance strikes into the darkness in exchange for mass area of effect purging with flame units. Of course, there are some arbitrators who thrive under fire, capable of controlling multiple detachments of squads, maintaining discipline, breaking resistance in the streets, but others more inclined to hone their understanding of the Lex Imperialis itself. They seek to dissect past rulings and adapt their procedures even mid-operation. And such a focus is very likely due to the fact that any promotion within the Arbites is, unlike other areas of Imperial Defence Forces, not singularly based on ability, but understanding and endurance. The survival of Arbites units is as important as their combat effectiveness, for to investigate effectively, to understand the world in which you operate, you need to survive long enough to actually know a region, its populace, and the darkest corners. And that would be especially true within a hive city such as Tertium, where each deployment has become a battle and every briefing containing a kill order. Those with a talent for violence and battlefield dominance, especially those who have proven themselves very difficult to kill, may ascend to the rank of proctor or marshal, with the former being enforcers of divine law in the most dangerous areas of a hive, riot breakers, gang crushers, and they will lead Arbites formations into those hostile depths, where their presence alone can often silence unrest, or, I suppose, trigger it. Marshals, by contrast, function above them. They orchestrate multiple precincts, they prioritise threat responses and oversee major operations. In a period of significant disruption, they're the ones who will choose which districts are locked down and which are sacrificed, as seen in Tertium. At the apex of authority stands a High Marshal, and this is a rank responsible for the deployment of Arbites forces across an entire planet or subsector. Their remit can include strategic allocation of manpower, coordination even with naval assets, essentially full oversight of fractured precinct fortress networks. They don't visit crime scenes or descend into hab zones, because in terms of enforcement, I'll just remind again, that Arbites enforce Imperial law, not local policy, because every world in the Imperium maintains its own tangle of separate laws, cultural prohibitions, guild restrictions, or hereditary mandates. And these are enforced by the planetary local enforcers. These forces typically dwarf the Arbites in their sheer weight of numbers. Superficially, they may wear similar gear, carry similar arms, and operate out of heavily armoured precincts. To the ordinary civilians, they're probably quite indistinguishable, but the present similarity in terms of aesthetic ends when a hive conflict is triggered, and the distinction would be immediately apparent. Local enforcers are planetary assets. They serve the interests of the governors, the noble houses, dynastic trade authorities, and most critically, their standards will vary considerably in terms of competency. Some precincts may be entirely bought, a blind eye turned to a murder, shipments of questionable goods are paid off, records vanish, or are just never submitted. That is not something you would ever see among the Arbites, for while local enforcement objectives may temporarily align with the goals of the Arbites, such as riot suppression, gang eradication, census enforcement, friction in terms of their overall integrity and operations is all but inevitable. and the nature of the Obiti's operation and enforcement means that they're likely far more to be interested with the internal conflicts and corruptions of the planetary enforcers themselves than they may well be with Hive scum. Because the role of the Arbitrator is very clear, to enforce the Lex Imperialis. This means to prevent the collapse of order where it will affect planetary productivity, and that means ensuring the integrity of local planetary enforcement and its bureaucracy. I suppose simply you could say they're there to police the police. But once a Hive city reaches the point seen in the lower Hive sectors of, say, Tertium, the Arbites will be far more concerned with the brutal extinguishing of that spread of corruption by any means necessary, because this has already moved far beyond just civilian disruption. This presents one of the most existential threats possible to the stability and productivity of a Hive world. Now, I briefly talked about the weapons carried by the Arbites earlier, but I'll just go through in a little more detail relative to how they reflect upon their purpose, in the sense of not necessarily just slaughtering enemies of the Imperium outright, but often the necessity in subduing and detaining them. Because as is true of, say, Inquisitors, the caricature is often stronger than the reality. For Arbites, execution is certainly a sentence, but it's not a reactive slip of restraint. For this reason, the bladed weapons more common among military forces of the Imperium are relatively rare among Arbitrators, because most often they want to take suspects alive for interrogation, confession, and judgment. Where local enforcers may reach for a lasgun or shock maul to end a confrontation, the Arbites select their tools with more care and competence, although that does also include shock mauls. Each of their tools is calibrated to preserve the order upon a world and crush resistance without compromising the procedural chain required by the Lex. Nonetheless, you'd be hard-pushed to categorize Arbites' weaponry as being refined. Most of their standard-issue melee weapons fall into the category of blunt or electrified force instruments, the most standard being batons used for their parrying ability and compatibility with close-quarters martial styles, and as I noted earlier, those shock mauls, which can be tuned for lower or higher voltage based on the target's threat level. And these are not tools of discretion, they're meant to be seen, they're meant to intimidate when facing off against crowds of hostile citizens, industrial workers, guilders, underhive scum who don't know anything better than a heavy beating. A more brutal variant would be power mauls. These are basically a baton surrounded by a power field, but unlike a shock maul, this field setting can be extensively adjusted. Used in combination with the suppression shield, it's a powerful means by which to break up angry, disruptive crowds or hold a defensive line. But variations are numerous to specific worlds, from more lethe, fencing-like mauls to heavy clubs among more violent, confrontational underhive situations. More advanced precincts or elite squads sometimes field so-called lathe pattern mauls. These are weapons likened more to a sword in terms of its precision and balance, ideal for narrow manufacturing corridor combat, and those with the training to wield it will find it one of the most refined weapons in the Arbites' arsenal, despite it still effectively being a maul. In those most volatile zones, heavy impact mauls can be deployed, such as this Cyclopea pattern power maul. This is a two-handed monstrosity, so far believed unique to the Calixus sector. Its overcharged disruption field is said to be able to hurl opponents bodily across the street and really terrify crowds into submission. Its power and presence is not so far away from the legendary Thunderhammers used by the Ecclesiarchy, the Astartes, the general military forces of the Imperium. But beyond tools of physical suppression, the Arbites also rely on breaching and mobility assets. A power ram, for example, it's not designed for combat, it's a breaking device to smash through reinforced doors, bulkheads and walls to access any and all that an Arbites squad may need to, or escape from. In the context of Tertium, as across the Imperium, these weapons will serve more than functional roles, they're part of the ritual theatre of judgement. To carry a shock maul, is to bear the Emperor's sentence, and in actuality, the Adeptus Arbites are empowered to field a staggering array of military-grade weaponry, far above local enforcer counterparts. It is just for the most part that generally isn't necessary. But when required to do so, their armories, especially upon hive worlds and in their precincts, are notorious for their breadth and capable of sustaining a siege, equipping 10 times their standing garrison. While all manner of las rifles and pistols are present within, there's surely no weapon more iconic, more trusted, and more brutally efficient in the hands of the Adeptus Arbites than their combat shotgun. When engaged in active conflicts, these shotguns are the herald of Arbites' judgment. They're the reply to anarchy, a baseline instrument through which the Lex Imperialis is enforced at street level. The Arbites, once again, are here to protect the interests of the Imperium, not the citizenry, which makes a combat shotgun a completely acceptable tool to use against civilian masses. Every arbitrator without exception is trained first and foremost in the use of this weapon, for it is not just a tool but a representative rite of passage. Arbites shotguns are a truly inhuman piece of craftsmanship, for it takes the basic structure of a planetary enforcer's base weapon and scales it to arbitrator standards. Its shells are nearly Astartes grade in diameter, offering immense stopping power, capable of downing the most heavily armoured enemies. The power is balanced against a substantial recoil management system, and its base reliability is prioritised over elegance or fire efficiency. The iconic weapon of the Arbites is designed to instill shock and terror, and thereby control hordes of the rioting citizens. But when pushed to it, any Arbites with experience knows how to balance the weapon to its maximal efficiency in terminal horde situations. And as we said earlier, their over-engineered construction ensures that even when the ammunition runs dry, the weapon itself functions as a blunt instrument, a detail not lost in the doctrine of Arbites riot suppression. Its reinforced stock and forward chassis make it as serviceable in the right hands in close quarters melee as it is in ranged engagements. And riot formations are drilled to chamber their shotguns in unison to also exploit psychological impact, a sound that alone has been said to quell some uprisings even before a single shot is fired, which speaks to the weight, role, and intimidating effectiveness of the Arbites. It's why they're present upon Imperial worlds. Arbitrators will carry a range of shell types, standard slugs, riot dispersal rounds, door breach charges, incendiary shells, toxin purge munitions, and as we said before, the executioner rounds. An often unmentioned feature that is beneficial for Arbites deployed to specific operations is the shotgun's singular load functionality that enables them to load individual specific rounds, meaning they could begin, say, with a breach round to enter a premises, then, without having to reload, begin engaging with whatever was required to subdue the enemies present. Reloading mid-combat can also allow them to quickly transition from a crowd suppression scenario to a lethal, high-priority takedown within seconds and without the need to switch weapons. Survival is of course as critical as lethality for the Arbites, or indeed any enforcers. But beyond this, the appearance of an arbitrator is as much a weapon to still the masses as is their maul or shotgun. For in a galaxy drowning in rebellion and disobedience, hive cities being swallowed by warp corruption and heretical cults, the Arbites understand that to maintain control, they must project an image of absolute authority. Their armour is there not simply for protection, it is the visual embodiment of Imperial law made manifest, designed to quiet criminals and disruptors just as much it might governors and heretics. Their carapace armour is a distinct unyielding system of layered plasteel plates mounted over a synthetic fibre body glove, and it is far advanced above standard enforcers who are lucky to be equipped with mid-quality PDF rejects. By polar comparison, Arbites armour will be manufactured in Forge Worlds, producing a modular resilient shell often tailored to each arbitrator. Their suits are designed for comfort and freedom of movement during long deployments, while maintaining enough protection to absorb the brunt of most conventional arms fire. And while unpowered versus the likes of the Sororitas or the Astartes, their armour still includes the same maglocking strips for mounting weapons, grenades or tools, reducing the need for cumbersome strapping or slings. And this simple feature is something not available to base level enforcers. And it is a feature that in a critical situation could very well be the difference between life and death. An RBT's helm is instantly recognisable across the Imperium, typically open at the mouth for verbal commands, but can also be sealed with a rebreather attachment in seconds. It features a visor which counters the effect of photon grenades, but also covers their face, again with parallels to Dread here. The intimidation effect is psychological. And during riot control, arbitrators have been seen to don brighter impact padding over their carapace armour, acting as a warning as much as it does protection, standing shoulder to shoulder with their lock shields to create interlocking walls of ceramite. But in other scenarios, some adepts will wear lighter, tool-laden gear that's suited for more technical forensic work, while elsewhere, full judges can be seen to carry more ornate, embellished outfits with a mixture of artisan work and intimidating regalia meant to project power and represent the millennia of unbroken imperial law. Regardless of the specific loadout, though, the RBT's role is as brutal and uncompromising as most enforcers, and while they may attempt to salvage targets intact, sometimes a bullet to the head during arrest is just how things go down. It would certainly not be considered excessive. But beyond the immediate objectives, those detainees may still expire in processing, which is certainly a regrettable reality of the conditions facing civilians under Imperial Hive rule. The final weapon, of course, for the RBTs is sentencing. The options for the convicted are, of course, numerous. A low-level crime or association may only warrant a public flogging. More problematic individuals could be sent to mineral extraction sites in the lower or exterior areas of a hive city, or should fabrication and industry be the focus of a world, then a life sentence of hard labour and long shifts will likely be the default. In the scenarios, though, which warrant a more measured approach, this can extend to general limb removal and even conversion to a new life role as a servitor. For those guilty of repeated petty crime, they may only see themselves facing penal legion conscription. For a member of the nobility, most likely planetary exile, and of course, in many cases, the crimes will extend to execution. In extreme cases, full precinct-level purges may be authorised in coordination with the planet's governor and high-ranking enforcers. The options for enforcement are extremely wide-ranging for arbitrators, up to and including the draft of auxiliary enforcers, hiring of bounty agents, even requesting official militarum support. But perhaps something, again, many are not aware of, is that their writ surpasses that of even the planetary governor, because, as noted, often it will be the governor's conduct that is frequently the most subjected to RBT's review. Late tithes, refusal to deploy regiments, lax enforcement of the Imperial Creed, all are indicators of potential sedition or, at the very least, lacklustre engagement with the necessities of Imperial demand. Should a governor be found negligent or even treasonous, they may very well be deposed, sanctioned, or just removed by force. All are within the authority and writ of the RBTs. But this will be temporary until a more suitable member can be found to hold that position. Until then, a judge or marshal of high standing will assume temporary control of a world's governance. In less stable or more rudimentary system outposts, such as fringe mining colonies or isolated hive nodes, it's within the authority for even a single arbitrator to still their claim oversight. Upon a world such as Atoma, though, within Hive Tertium, each district continues to rot under its own weight, heresy bleeding through the ducts, the demonic whispers that are warping the minds of the starving, the corrupted, the desperate. And so the escalation for involvement of the RBTs is far from being implausible, but it is not necessarily concerned with the governorship, for the danger is more raw, more pressing, more immediately necessary to be dealt with. The Lex Imperialis is not just a shield, it is a weapon, and the Arbites bring it to bear upon the heretic and the complicit alike, until all contamination has been purged and order is restored, no matter how long that may take. Like many institutions of the Imperium, the Arbites do not exist by default upon every world. They're not universal or readily accessible. They're designated to a world or otherwise dispatched only as are needed, or where the Imperium suspects it could potentially see cracks appear, followed by a potential collapse of order. Because of this role, hive cities by their very nature will usually have some presence representative of the Arbites. But while bound to uphold the Lex Imperialis and the dictates of the Book of Judgment, Arbites doctrine permits significant flexibility in their deployment, their role specialization, their adaptation to specific planetary conditions, particularly in theatres where traditional law enforcement is not really viable or even possible. Their presence, though, is not just always widespread. Even upon worlds which have significant strategic value, they may still only host a single precinct with a minimal garrison. But elsewhere, upon extreme frontier or war-torn environments, Arbites may act more as sentinels of order, diplomatic agents, than raw, static enforcers. Individuals may be assigned broad territories. They might spend weeks or even months out in the field, gathering intelligence, making legal assessments, delivering sentences, maintaining communication networks between disparate communities or factions, making connections and understanding the situation. All of which seems to not necessarily fit this intimidating aesthetic of an arbitrator, but it directly ties into their duties of monitoring tithe compliance, recording the movements of key resources, assessing planetary governance, tracking the actions of local power structures, and serving as basically intermediaries in disputes. They must build their contacts among underworld elements, traders, religious enclaves, and political factions. They rely on judgment and intelligence without compromising their impartiality. They remain empowered to act with independence, but also remaining fully accountable to imperial law. This operational doctrine has produced a subculture of versatile, highly autonomous arbitrators whose experience exceeds the boundaries of their standard precinct training. And while posting to these fringe assignments are often viewed with disdain by central precincts, they are also some of the most demanding and transformative experiences available to an arbitrator. The skills developed in these harsh theatres are frequently unmatched by those who serve solely in the urban or highly regimented sectors. And consequently, to no surprise, many of the Imperium's most accomplished arbitrators can trace their development back to such frontier deployments. Or in the case of a situation as seen upon Tertium, the collapsing districts of a hive city under threat of heretical corruption in its most extreme fashion may be the crucible in which legendary arbitrators are born. Because no matter where they're deployed, all arbitrators exist to represent the Book of Judgment, the law, the Lex Imperialis. This contains the accumulated rulings, edicts, decrees, and interpretations that form the judicial body of the Imperium. Every word the Emperor ever spoke on law, every decision passed down from the High Lords of Terror, every precedent etched into the margins of parchment by long-dead scribes. It is the Imperial Chronicle of Law. For any Arbites judge, a pilgrimage to Terror is the ultimate honour in their studies of the law, and here, where it all began, many will be now consumed by it. Some will spend years studying the contradictions of the Lex. Its sheer scale and complexity mean that in many cases some Arbites never return, and in especially complex cases it would not be uncommon for a judge to die before issuing a verdict, passing their investigation down the chain of command. Centuries later, a ruling may still come, and when it does, those descended or distantly connected to the original crime may still be sentenced in full, perhaps to their complete shock and unawareness, because no arbitrator can possibly comprehend all the millions of cases that have been covered across the millennia. While out among the stars, reality just marches ever forward, in collapsing sectors where heresy festers beneath every hive spire, cults rising faster than precincts can be reinforced, cities like Tertium where mass arrests, summary executions must be processed through a lens of efficiency more than doctrinal precision. For the most fundamental lesson for any arbites in training is to understand that it is not the scale of a crime which determines whether they will intervene, but its direction. Crimes that could ultimately challenge the authority of the Imperium, sedition, sabotage, obstruction of tithe operations, these must be investigated and punished without leniency. A tavern brawl that leads to multiple deaths may be fully ignored by the arbites, but if a single stone, bottle, or blunt instrument in that brawl were to strike an administratum scribe, they will respond with armoured deployment, interrogation teams, rapid sentencing. They will likely see those perpetrators never return to their districts. Human life, as codified in the Lex Imperialis, is not valued for its own sake, but only in terms of its collective contribution. Because of this big picture perspective, true imperial law, the Lex, the Book of Judgment, is deeply theological in nature, as it was from its earliest days. So to any who should violate the Lex, it's not simply a legal crime technically, it's also a moral offence, a breach of the Emperor's rightful expectation of loyalty, service, and order. Now, the concept of a moral offence might seem comical within the Imperium of Mankind, especially when near to every crime investigated by the arbites carries with it an element of heresy, thereby justifying the severity of their methods, along with the notion of a petty crime not really existing within arbites doctrine. But the idea of an immoral action against the Lex is defined by this ideological rigidity that the arbites see in heretical abstractionism. What does that mean? So, it's this idea that one could interpret the spirit of the law over its literal text. That's a concept absolutely reviled within the ranks and scholars of the arbites, because to claim understanding to the law's hidden spirit would elevate oneself to the level of the emperor, in effect placing personal judgment above established order. Such thinking is both illegal and blasphemous. The letter of the law is sacred and must be followed precisely, even when it contradicts instinct or sentiment. The law is the law. Of course, this is where the bleak madness of the Imperium comes into play, because despite this rigid view of their Lex, by its literal source material, the vast scope of Imperial law is so immense that it remains impossible for any one individual to master it in its totality, thereby somewhat undermining the entire concept. Even senior judges rely on archive savants and cogitation engines to process their legal references, which means that in practice it falls to this specialized class of legal scholars to interpret and implement imperial law that's required in complex cases. They're known generally as magistrates. These are the elite legal minds that will be deeply, but not necessarily comprehensively, versed in both sector-level law and planetary legal systems. Their role is twofold: to act as advisors and legal interpreters for planetary elites, the governors, the nobles, even inquisitors. They're also there to ensure that actions taken by the Imperium's upper echelons remain within the framework of imperial legality, or that they can at least be made to appear to do so. Many magistrates, unlike arbitrators, will be stationed nearer to seats of power, where their rulings are considered more authoritative across an entire subsector. Their duties will extend beyond just legal interpretation, of course, and magistrates can be called out upon to justify or retroactively legalize imperial actions, such as military intervention, summary execution, or policies of suppression. They may pre-approve a strike by an arbites precinct or construct legal arguments that shield noble patrons from political fallout. And this legal flexibility is particularly prized by inquisitors, whose operations often bring them into tension with others who hold power. And you might think to yourself, why would an inquisitor care in any way about that? Well, while the Inquisition is officially above the law, a skilled magistrate can prevent internal conflict by crafting interpretations that maintain the appearance of cooperation and compliance. Because despite inquisitors holding ultimate authority to basically do whatever they want, anyone with intelligence above an Ogryn would understand that it's better to do things through a cooperative alliance than just brute force. It's kind of like people saying, why doesn't Gilliman, in his return, just get rid of the ecclesiarchy and the imperial religion? It's like, yes, technically he could do that, but basically everybody, most especially Gilliman himself, understands that doing so would be extraordinarily destructive. And it's the same with an inquisitor. Yes, they could come barging in, dictating whatever they want to, but sometimes that isn't the best way to go. Of course, as is typical for the Imperium, not all RBTs accept the same interpretations. Among the more zealous members of the Judicium, magistrates are viewed with some suspicion, because many have been known, perhaps over years of drip-drip slow coercion, to exploit rulings for maybe not personal gain, but certainly tactical ends. In the eyes of a magistrate, much like an inquisitor, they likely believe themselves to be at a level of power that they are acting in the interests of all upon the larger sector or galactic stage even. From the eyes of hardline, fresh-to-the-ranks RBTs, they're seen less as legal assets and more like sophisticated criminals cloaked in their parchment and precedent. To them, the law is not a tool to be bent, but a hard-written code that must be preserved no matter how unpalatable. The existence of any divergent philosophies within the enforcement apparatus fosters, therefore, tension, most especially in sectors where heresy and bureaucratic overreach were already known to frequent. And this is only compounded by the fact that upon reaching the rank, magistrates can then disappear to be trained in seclusion. There are practical reasons for that, but they're far from then the oversight of precinct commanders. Later, they could then return or be brought into a sector by a noble or ecclesiarchal patronage. Their outside status would be seen as independent or impartial, but usually will most likely only compound their unpopularity within RBT's circles. With all of that said, though, their skill is undeniable. Many magistrates are master orators, capable of persuading even the most rigid of judges to adopt their interpretations when they finally stand before them in person. Their rhetorical strength is matched by their deep institutional knowledge, and it would not be uncommon at all for them to become indispensable within the high-level governance required by those key imperial worlds. So a single magistrate can hold so much authority that they may even dictate the framework of a crusade, the justification of a hive purge, or the validity of an entire inquisitorial operation, which in the bigger picture may not seem so important, but in terms of order and the smooth running of imperial planets, it remains critical. The doctrine of judgment remains their entire philosophy, for in the eyes of the Imperium, their loyalty is tested not through their belief, but through practical outcomes. The sense that so-called justice is served, the law remains upheld, and most importantly, order is maintained. Now, as noted, I have spoken specifically about the cyberdogs of RBTs before now, for they're no mere mascots. A cybermastiff is a sanctioned weapon, brutal, loyal, tireless, and designed to enforce the law with all the subtlety of a baneblade. Cybermastiffs are biomechanical warbeasts employed by cadres across the Imperium. They're engineered for resilience, programmed for obedience, and augmented with weapons and subdermal armor. These creatures serve as both companions and enforcers to the law's most relentless agents. Their primary functions, unsurprisingly, include subduing suspects, breaching enemy strongholds, patrolling dangerous zones, and providing perimeter security. A Cybermastiff may be fitted with various upgrades such as auditory scanners, Vox scramblers, scent analyzers, and data uplinks, thus allowing them to detect unregistered psychers, track fugitives through void slag and sump-choked ruins, and even transmit live reconnaissance to their handlers, HUD. They're not autonomous in the full sense, but they operate with limited independence, capable of tracking targets or defending their arbiter, even if separated. But as with some variants of servitors, they're bred, built, and bonded in numbered batches, each given a codename rather than an actual identity. There are many variants throughout the Imperium, such as the Subreek Bloodhound, crafted in the bowels of Hive Subreek. This companion makes use of a rare chemical contained within its oceans, which translates airborne particles into quantifiable data, thereby making the Bloodhound highly optimized for scent-based tracking. And once implanted in a Cybermastiff chassis, their instinct and training is linked to some of the most sophisticated olfactory sensors available. And together this makes the Bloodhound both obsessive and tireless in its duty. Some have been even rumored to track targets for hundreds of miles through a hive without rest. But a Cybermastiff is never given affection like the more traditional human companions, because they are just another tool in the arsenal of the Arbites. They're designed to endure pain, kill, on command. They're fiercely loyal to a handler and will grow extraordinarily aggressive, even violent, to anybody who tries to interfere with them, be that a criminal, civilian, perhaps even, unfortunately, fellow arbitrators. And this is due to the bond between the handler and Mastiff not being one established through time and training, but in fact neurochemically reinforced. And this can have an unfortunate but also perhaps situationally beneficial result, in that should one see the termination of their handler in combat, the Cybermastiff will react with an immediate and extremely violent response, which given the conditions may well be exactly the response required. Within Tertium and the collapsing hive structures of Atoma Prime, we will now see how Cybermastiffs have become an asset of grim necessity. Many sectors having collapsed into anarchic ruin, insurgents, cultists, and plague-stricken heretics crawl through their ferrocrete fractures, buried transit shafts, drones being jammed, Orspecs blinded, and Vox relays entirely unreliable. And this is an environment that is optimal for the deployment of a Cybermastiff. For these units are not just an aid, but a lifeline. They can be deployed into rad-choked tunnels where no human operative can survive. They can flush out cult dens from beneath habstacks that have not seen daylight for decades, if ever. In zones where enforcers or low-tier patrolmen would be just slaughtered or subverted, a Cybermastiff can wade through carnage without hesitation and, crucially, not succumb to panic or corruption. The recent proliferation of demon host manifestations and warp-tainted insurgents within Tertium has placed a premium on the deployments of human scum auxiliaries. In these conditions, handlers and mastiffs may be embedded with established veteran squads or just sent ahead of purge teams. They're a tool, yes, but many within the Arbites know that they are much more than that. They're a vessel for the Lex, in the sense that they exist as something that knows its duty, that cannot be reasoned with or corrupted or stopped until the law has been delivered and the order of the Imperium enforced through the crushing jaws of judgment. Across a million worlds, the Adeptus Arbites are this thin, brutal line between the Imperium's sacred order and the lawless dark that threatens to consume it. They do not serve the citizens, they serve the throne. Their purpose is singular, to enforce the Lex Imperialis. With the next update to Darktide, you will now step into this mantle of divine authority, descending into the darkness of Hive Tertium, not as peacekeepers, but as the Emperor's final instrument against the scum who threaten the operational order of its worlds, Atoma Prime. You are his judgment to act, prosecute, and punish. The Arbites class is a formidable addition to any Tertium strike team. As an Imperial Arbitrator, you can wield massive suppressive fire in a supportive positioning role. You will wield the Arbiti's most iconic tools in the Cyber Mastiff, the Dominator Maul, the Arbiti's Shot Pistol, and their Special Issue Shotgun, loaded with the necessary proprietary ammunition. With their reinforced carapace, armor, and assault shields, you have the flexibility of taking a vanguard role or that of a staunch bulwark, moving into enemy hordes alongside your companions with impunity before delivering the Emperor's final judgment. The Arbiti's class also introduces the Nuncio Aquila, an anti-grav vox platform that projects amplified vocal commands. Within the role of an arbitrator, this is used as a riot dispersal technology, but it works equally well in an offensive capacity, screaming the judgments of the Arbiti's to disrupt enemy formations, suppress morale, and assert dominance over the weak-willed. Any character you choose to take on remains immersed in the identity of the Arbiti's. Choosing from 6 voices and 3 personalities, a range of interpretation within the doctrine of the Lex, be that a firebrand zealot of the law, a by-the-book traditionalist, or a more quiet, methodical executioner. Visual customization in this update also extends to the Cyber Mastiff, enabling creation of your own emblem of fear and obedience to deploy into the Imperium's most treacherous zones. Yet even in their individuality, the Lex Imperialis tolerates no personal expression, only the rigidly efficient application of its doctrine. That is what makes the Arbiti's both terrifying and necessary. They're not the heroes of the Astartes or the Imperial Guard, they're not defenders of the faith and civilian innocence. They are the cold, uncompromising instruments of a framework so vast that no one mind can comprehend even a fraction of its texts. They stand backed by centuries, if not millennia, of precedent. And now, within the darkest corners of Hive Tertium, where the lines that blur between heresy and abject despair have all but collapsed, the arrival of an arbitrator is the final sentence. You will become the Emperor's law, the only real truth. Let the heretic, the mutant, the traitors and faithless take heed. Judgment has arrived.